Yeah. I'm right back at it with my brother Jay Dutch. Fresh new trash for the family, what the fuck? My man Big Derek, but we call him old school. About to get up on the mic and straight up act school. Ain't no fiction here, cause we only talking facts. If he's talking about the bucks, he don't cut him no slack. No need to waste time, and let's get right to it. What the fuck podcast, ain't nothing to it but to do it. Yeah. About to turn it over to my man old school with the What the Buck podcast. Check it, yo. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Old School, coming to you live from Studio 76. We're going to try some Facebook video. I got my internet upgraded today. Finally, I'm out of the Stone Age. And it looks like the laptop doesn't like doing Mixlr and Facebook Live videos concurrently. So we'll screw with that some this off week. Like we're ever going to have an off week. We had a game come back on Thursday. But we will definitely mess with that a little bit in our spare time. And see if we can get that going. A lot of you guys have complained that the video is something you miss, which is hard for me to believe since I have a face for radio. But if we can get that back and running, then we're happy to do that. And with the upgraded internet speeds, that shouldn't be an issue. It's just a matter of making sure we get the configuration on the laptop where it needs to be. So hopefully the audio is good for you over here in Mixlr, which is our normal home. And it's funny, I want to tell a little side story about Mixlr. I was driving to Miami last week after the Bucks game, and I got a chance to listen to the PewterCast Instant Cast with Brent and Ren. And it was great. I was driving down Alligator Alley listening to Mixlr and listening to Bucks talk from folks that I know actually know the Bucks, and was able to call in. I accidentally screwed up and bumped Ren off the call because of the way I called in, I think via Skype. So that was an unintentional and unfortunate side effect of my call in. But I'll tell you what, the fact that, 12 years ago, podcasting was sort of this esoteric niche thing, but now it's become so mainstream. Everyone's got a podcast, which is good, bad, or indifferent. I don't really care. It's great. Everyone can do that. The platform's available. If you have a story to tell, you have a way to tell it, which is great. There's something beautiful about that. So if you can find a tribe that's interested in what you're talking about, then you're good to go. But the technology has finally gotten to the point where it's not like I've got to be sitting in front of a computer listening to this thing anymore. It's not that narrow cast that it used to be. I literally was in my car, threw my phone on, saw the link, hopped in, going through the Bluetooth, and driving down the interstate listening to Brent and Ren and a lot of great callers, which was really, really cool. So Brent says he counted the other day, and there are 22 Bucks-related podcasts. I can remember in iTunes when there was one. Actually, there were two, but one was no longer really there. It just had episodes from like 10 years ago. So I think the more the merrier, to be honest. I think we all learn from each other. We get style differences. We get approach differences. And to be honest, it's like anything else. I say this all the time. It's like ice cream. Not everybody likes vanilla, not everybody likes chocolate. It's great to have plenty of flavors. So you get in where you fit in, and hopefully everyone's getting a chance to enjoy those different podcasts. Big shout out to Brent again. Not that I'm trying to give him too much credit, but I like him, and I like what they do at PewterCast, and they just hit their 100,000, I assume, total downloads, which is a big milestone for a podcast. So congratulations on that, guys. Keep up the great work. So get you guys brief for what we got going on tonight. Our guest tonight is Stephen Che. From Che Say on Twitter, if you guys remember Steven, he used to do a lot of video work for PewterReport.com. He's done video report on his own. We've had him on the show before. You guys know we like the video guys. We like real Bucks fan talk. We like a ton of these guys that do the good video stuff, and they put them into GIFs. And to be honest, I don't have the time to do that. I love that people do. I would love to, be able to do the drops and things like that we used to do in the past. If I can find a tech that lets me do it and the NFL won't come with a big billy bat and beat me over the head, then I'd love to incorporate that into the show, because I really do think the X's and O's are critical to understand, especially as you evolve, in my opinion, and I do think it's an evolution as a fan. So we'll have Steven on at about 9:20. He'll be calling in, and we'll be talking about the Bucks and Vikings. We'll also talk about the Bucks and Giants. So let me remind you guys about our sponsors at the beginning, because I've got to do that always, because if it weren't for them, we really could not do the things that we do. So first and foremost, I want to thank Steps Towing, our signature partner, our platinum partner, for stepping up and jumping in before anybody. We love what they do over there. We appreciate all that they do at Steps Towing. Pepin Distributing, Steakhouse Elite, Tito's Vodka, Don Q Rum. These guys all make what we do possible. We got a bunch of those guys coming to the tailgate. You know, they keep the Bud Light flowing. They keep the Tito's vodka going, the Don Q drinks that Sharon puts together for you guys. They're the ones who make that happen. Then Steakhouse Elite with their Kobe Crafted Beef. Those guys step up in a billion different ways, and not just in the podcast. They allow us to do the things we do. They allowed us to get over $2,000 in net going to the charity last tailgate. And with the numbers, I was talking to Spent, who I think is in the chat. There she is. She's in the chat room now. We get all these questions and queries about what's up with the tailgate and where is it and give me the details. Even though we post it pretty much everywhere in the entire universe, and that's okay. Like, we get it. Not everyone's been to our tailgate before. But the number has been outstanding. I think we're in store for a really good tailgate this week, despite, let's just say, some fan, what I would call, overreaction. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we get into this. So, another reminder, our entire season this year is dedicated to our fallen crew member, Richard Zeller, Stuck. We lost him in the offseason. Not a day goes by we don't think about him. So if you see those patches start to pop up on jerseys, that's why. If you ever want to know about him, ask any of us, and we'll happily tell you what's going on with Richard and how we're better knowing who he was. So this week's plan for the tailgate, we're opening up at 11. It's a 4 o'clock game. We'll open up at 11. We'll be out there setting up. You guys know the drill. The flyer's out on the website. The flyer's out on Twitter. $20 recommended minimum donation. You'll get your food. You'll get your drinks. We'll have music. We'll have cornhole. We'll have games. You'll meet new people. I expect to see a gigantic crowd. It's going to be a tremendous time. And like Spence said, it really has been an all-week tailgate for us because we've had so many queries coming in about what's going on. Now, we promised a little bit of a rant. And it's funny, as I was getting ready for the show tonight, I've got my notes. And if you had video, you'd see this. I've got my notes like I always do. I've got the game book and I've got all the matchups and all the normal shit that we'll talk about when we talk about the Giants. But I went off on a bit of a tirade at halftime. And I do want to send a shout-out to the Stick Carriers who went down to your watch party or to the watch party in Sarasota. Had a good time with those guys at Buffalo Wild Wings. And generally speaking, to be honest, there wasn't a whole lot of the angst and anger that I saw on Twitter. Now, I tweeted out right before the show a picture of the back of our 10th anniversary our 10th anniversary shirts. Right now, this is our 12th season. I'm pretty sure that's correct because Cheryl keeps me honest on dates because I'm terrible. We did a 10th anniversary shirt with some comments on the back just talking about how shitty the football had been over that decade, that we had continued to grow and make new friends and expand what we do and work in the community and spread football and still enjoy going Sundays or Thursdays or Mondays or whenever the game happened to be and enjoying food and enjoying drinks and enjoying each other and going and trying to enjoy some damn football. We are 1-1 currently. Yes, we had a mud hole stomped in our ass by the Minnesota Vikings this week. We were down 5-7 starters. Doesn't matter. Excuses are not of any use, to be honest, but they are still facts, folks. It is still a fact that both teams on all of these fields are professional football teams. No matter what you'd like to pretend, no matter how often you'd like to say it, the difference between 1-32 is incredibly narrow. It is not the vast crevasse that many of you would like to think. And for every time one of you utters, "I can't believe it was Case Keenum," you should quickly hit yourself in whatever sensitive part of the body is most easily accessible, because guess what? He is still currently, allegedly, one of the top 32 throwers of the football. Now, if you go back and watch the tape, and I'll ask Steven about this too, he was dropping the ball in pretty damn well. It's not like he's some kind of slappy. Now, regardless, even if you think he's a slappy, which, by the way, you're wrong, at least in that game, he played a good game. People can pull it out of their ass. And Chris Oxendine in the chat room brings up a good point. I heard about Brent Grimes not playing about 6 minutes before the pregame. So you lose your number one cover corner. You've got all your linebacker issues. You've got all the other issues we got going on with Baker out, run stopper, all these things, right? Now, I'm not here to make the excuses, but these are simply facts. It got so bad afterwards that players are saying, "Come down and talk to me," like Gerald McCoy. And here's the other thing, guys. And you guys know I don't pull any punches. You guys know that I don't say anything here or at a tailgate that I wouldn't say to these players. I'm fortunate to know some of these players. I respect what they do. I respect who they are. I said this in training camp. There was an edge already. Now, I happen to think it was because of Hard Knocks. You guys will probably say it's just because I hate Hard Knocks, and we can have that conversation at some point if you'd like to. But when you come in with the kind of pressure that this team has had, when you inflate the pressure with the microscope shoved up your ass from HBO, you could already see, it wearing on Coach Cutter. Now, Coach Cutter has started going after Roy. He'll go after others. Coach has got an edge to him. That doesn't bother me necessarily, right? I don't necessarily care about that. But like I've said before, you only really get away with being an asshole if you win games. Bill Belichick can be an asshole all day long because he wins games. It's tougher to do that when you're not winning games. In my opinion, and what I would like to see the team that I love do, I would like to see them be more workmanlike. I get it, Gerald. You're defending your teammates. I get it. Fans say just some horrific shit. I heard it at the thing from one individual who I'll talk to again. It wasn't beyond one. People get mad. They have too much to drink. They're passionate. These people are humans. Just because you're behind a keyboard doesn't make it right for you to say some of the shit that you guys are saying. Act like fans. I'm not going to lecture the folks listening to this podcast too long about this because I honestly don't think it's many of you who are doing it. But if you see that kind of crap going on, tell them how to act. We are fortunate to have a football team. I'd like to see them win. I think we had a lot of hopes going in. You're never as good as you think, and you're never as bad as you think. The highs are never as high, and the lows are never as low. We've said this before. We'll say it again. You come out of the Chicago game, and we're all excited, and then people start going, oh, well, it was the Bears, and they suck, and their receivers weren't there, and it was Mike Glennon, and blah, blah, blah. That wasn't a very good quality win. And then they go out, and they played Pittsburgh like a different team. You had so many upsets last week. This game is a exercise in parity, folks. I saw that someone burned a jersey in front of One Buck Place today. That's phenomenal. Great. Way to go. It's your right to do it. Now, mind you, and I'm not going to expand this too much on the podcast tonight, but we all have rights to do things. Doesn't mean I can't call you an asshole for doing it, right? I said it before the game last week. I said it at halftime. If all you guys want to get rid of your Bucks stuff, let me know. Bring it over because I'm a Bucks fan. Now, we will talk about the Vikings. Like I said, we've got Steven getting ready to come in at 9:20. And we'll talk about the tape. We'll talk about what he saw. We'll go to the X's and O's. And Spent, you're right. The pressure, and I saw Brent commented too. Here's the thing. Reporters are going to ask questions that coaches are going to think are stupid. And Roy's comment on the one today was he can't just give a narrative and not have it echoed by the coach. So reporters have to set the coach up to say the things they want to write the story about. Now, coach is not wrong because they're doing that. They're setting up the story. It happens every press conference. Quit acting brand new. I get it. You're mad. The team didn't play well. I get it. You're mad. The season hasn't gone the way you wanted to. You're the head coach of the team. He's got to do better. I like Coach Cutter. I like attitude. I like all that stuff. But that went on way too long. It just did, in my opinion. But whatever. He doesn't have to care what I think. He's the head coach of the Buccaneers. I'm just telling you, you'll get a lot further. You can take your shots. But like they say, praise publicly and chastise privately if you can do it. And I'd like to see the adults on this team, whether they're the coaches or the players, realize their job is to go win games, to go perform well, perform at a high level, regardless of who's playing. They've got to game plan effectively. They've got to have a good scheme. They've got to adjust to the variables that come in during the game day. And then from a player perspective, they have to execute the plays. Now, whether that's the quarterback having to make the throws on time, on target, make the right reads, the receivers have to catch the ball when it gets to them, whether it's the defensive lineman actually getting to the quarterback. Spence says the flip side of this is how many coaches is Cummings covered. I'm not sure what she's asking. So I don't know. He's called as long as I've been around, Roy's been around. And like I said, you're going to get questions that seem stupid. And we talk about all the time, like, you know, what's the temperature in Baghdad? Listen, he was asking about the running game. The running game was abysmal. They ran the ball like 8 times. Cutter has said before in previous press conferences, it was because they got behind on the scoreboard. In my opinion, he gave up on the run too soon. He became one-dimensional. He became predictable. He had some success in the passing game that made him think he could continue to press it. He continued to press it. This is, in my opinion, what Steve White and I used to say all the time. It's guru-itis. you get so enamored with your tools and your weapons that you start just trotting them out. And you forget the fact that if you go to the passing game all the time, you stop controlling the clock. And that defense that is so thin because it has so many injuries is now out there too long. In the second quarter, they're out there for 10 minutes and 16 seconds. And that's when things went super downhill. But even with that, coming into the third quarter, at the end of the second, the beginning of the third quarter, this is a game that was still a possible comeback time. Jameis didn't do a good job. When he had to convert, he didn't. And it's tough to say, K-Moto, if it's a poor play calling situation or if it's a poor execution. There were people running open on a number of these plays. And by the way, Mike Evans, I love you, but I don't need to know how running wide open you were, because all that does is make it look like you're debasing your quarterback, which I don't think you're doing. But by the way, Mike Evans, on the sideline, I don't want to see you knocking shit over and acting like a seven-year-old. Act like you've been there before. This team is supposed to be better than this. You cannot control all the variables. You will lose games you should win. There will be calls that go different ways. There will be balls that bounce the wrong way. But you can control who you are. You can control how you act. I get it, you want to win. I get it, you want the ball. I get it, you want whatever the hell you want when you're on the sideline. You're a leader of this team. Act like it. On every play that something bad happens, there's someone open, I assure you. This is not revelation. That's why the quarterback has to make the best possible decision. Now, let's just flip that around a little bit while we wait for Steven to call in on the Skype line. If Jameis delivers the ball to a person who's covered, hits him in the hands, does it matter if there were other people open? There could have been a better decision. Certainly, I could see that. But let's say his best receiver is being double covered, which is usually a misnomer. But let's just say for argument's sake and for simplicity's sake, they're literally double covered. They're in bracket coverage. And he delivers a dime into his hands. Was it the best decision? Maybe not. Maybe you should have gone to Adam Humphries. Maybe you should have dumped it off to a back in the flat. But if the execution is there, each of those players in that play have to execute. Now, on the throw to Mike Evans where he threw into what looked to be essentially triple coverage because the safety had over top coverage, he still hit him in the hands. Now, Mike, I don't expect him to catch that. It's putting him in a bad position, right? I get that. It wasn't the throw he should have done. He stared the damn thing down. But still, he hit him in the hands, right? So, now, we can't project whether it was because of the tirade on the sideline that James was trying to force the ball to Mike instead of going to Deshaun, who he'd been looking for earlier, who had a nice little breakout game, a great catch in the end zone, moved around the field very, very well. But guys, let's not pretend that when you're throwing the ball, you should catch it. Let's not pretend you shouldn't do that. Sorry. My dramatic pause was completely wasted by that. Now, we're going to talk in more detail about that. We're going to talk in more detail about the defense, who was completely hamstrung with their injuries. And I hate to use hamstrung because that's exactly what we got going on with Quan Alexander. We got Lavonte David out. We've got all sorts of things going on that are not looking good. On the defensive side of the ball, we're facing the New York Giants team that is literally up against it. 0-3 coming into this game. They're a team that has not experienced poor play recently. Let me get this call in here.
That has not experienced.
Hello, Steven. Steven, you're going to need to turn down your mic, I think. Well, you're good now. Okay, there we go. Perfect. Welcome. Steven Shea, how you doing?
Good, Derek. How you doing?
I'm well. Let me get your audio level set up because you're actually calling via Skype, not via the phone in, and that's a much more high-fidelity connection. So welcome to the show. It's good to have you back. We've had you on before. Yes. I know that you're out there doing your video again, and I finally can pronounce your name. It is, in fact, Che. It's not Chia or anything like that. So for those of you who don't know who,
otherwise.
For those of you who don't know who Steven is one of the, and I think you put it in your Twitter profile, originator, which I like because I'm an asshole. he's been breaking down all 22 film as long as people had access to it in the population, I think, the general population, not on the teams. Now, Steven, I want you to jump right into this, and if you don't mind, I'd like to go backwards then forwards because I think you have to look back to go forward. Was this game as bad as it seemed to feel to most fans?
Derek, great question. The answer is no. It did look very bad on the field. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It wasn't like a friendly game to watch. Audio difficulty. Yeah, it wasn't a very good game to watch. There were a lot of holes in the secondary. Watching it live, I was all over Vernon Hargreaves. We got no pass rush. A lot of issues that I noticed and definitely did exist, but overall on tape, it wasn't as bad as I thought. I thought Tampa Bay Trevor Sikkema from Peter Report did a really great job in his cover three on Tuesday, diagnosing exactly how it was more of a scheme issue with what happened with the Bucs. But, I mean, early on, the first deep throw, it was like 40 yards, whatever, to Adam Thielen, really had the corners kind of back on their heels. The Bucs did a great job. Watching the game live, I actually thought Dalvin Cook had like a tremendous game. He did have a pretty good game. He had about 97 rushing, 70-something receiving. Most of it on one play towards the end, but in the receiving category. But he actually did got bottled up by the Bucs run defense. To get to 97 yards, I think it took him about 27 carries. He was averaging about 3.6, 3.7 yards a carry. Overall, continuously, he would be slamming into the line. It would be Will Golst and Gerald McCoy, Levante before he got hurt. That was probably the most encouraging thing was the run defense. There were a lot of problems with the game. The offensive line, I think, was probably the biggest issue in the play calling. The interior of the offensive line, especially. Ali Marpet, everyone could see on TV, three bad snaps. Whenever you're snapping to the quarterback out of the shotgun, you got to kind of give him the ball in the spot where he wants it, a little right above his belly, right in the number, so he can keep his eyes downfield. Marpet had three really bad snaps. Winston was able to hold on to one of them, make a really nice play to Adam Humphries, but the other two were drive killers. Just really inopportune timing. What else? The interior of the offensive line, Evan Smith, on a third down early when it was 7-3, just gave up a really quick pressure. That led to the near interception that Cameron Brate saved. Spezia had a really rough game, too.
Point of order, while that may have contributed to the near interception that Cameron Brate saved, what led to the near interception was Jameis Winston making a stupid fucking decision to throw the ball when he was getting killed.
Agreed.
Right, and, 100%. You will not find a more ardent Jameis Winston supporter than I, probably, unless they went to Florida State, right, which is a very real thing.
Yeah.
Yep. But here's the thing. That's the bad Jameis that shows up every once in a while, and it has to disappear forever.
Yes.
Right? But did you notice, you talked about Evan Smith, they're still cycling him and Pamphil over there on the guard, right?
Yeah. It's very curious because Evan Smith is actually getting a little bit more burn than Pamphil, and Pamphil was great last year. So I'm not really sure if it's injury-related, I would say Evan Smith is probably playing two-thirds of the downs, which is much more than I would like.
And, I wonder, and we can only speculate, there was an illness that was running roughshod through the Buccaneers organization. And the team certainly looked to be a bit flat-foot, a little bit lackluster, et cetera. Who knows?
Yep.
We can't say how that impacted anyone.
Absolutely.
But I agree. We heard at the beginning, Pamphil and Evan were going to cycle in and out, and D's Bucks just said in the chat room that he had the flu bug last week. This is a team that could be very, very sick at this point. Now, you don't want to give them too many excuses, but this is something that's very real. Now, we've got Stephen Che on the line. That's at Che_say on Twitter, doing his All-22 review, talking about what we're talking about here, which is the Bucks and the Vikings. Now, this is supposed to be a high-powered offense. We've been sold a bill of goods on this offense. They've built around Jameis. They've given him tons of weapons. We've all been excited, walking around with hard-ons, thinking this is going to be the greatest offense the Bucs have ever seen.
Yeah.
What was your biggest surprise with the offense?
It was tough. I mean, the interior of the offensive line, how I touched on, had two. Marpet had two drive-killing snaps. Evan Smith had the drive-killing, just complete whiff on a defensive tackle. But just the play calling overall, I think Jacquizz Rodgers only had 5 carries. I would be shocked if the Bucs didn't try to establish the run early and often. I forget what game it was last year where they came out with 6 straight runs. I'm thinking something like that. In the second half, you could see Dirk tried to really do that. There was one drive, I think, in the third quarter where they ran Jacquizz Rodgers twice for 4 yards, setting up a 3rd and 2, and that's when you had one of the Marpet bad snaps. Not to continue to pile on him here. But overall, I mean, just the game got out of hand, and then the score really dictated this hurry-up offense, which I thought Jameis actually played pretty well in it, aside from a handful of throws. But, you know, that can be the difference between winning and losing. I wouldn't necessarily pin this game on him in terms of how he played. But definitely, you know, as you mentioned, something to clean up moving forward.
Now, you talk about Jameis playing well. It's interesting how a quarterback can play. It can do, let's say, 80% of the things really well. But when they do some things really badly, it mars the rest of the game. And you look at this game, I talked about it in the intro monologue. While this game felt like it was just an ass-whipping or a curb-stomping, at the beginning of the third quarter, I was talking to Skip Brown. We were sitting together at the watch party. And you still got an opportunity to get a score and pull this thing to within, you know, a one-score game. And this is why I am, and you said game plan, and I know Tampa Bay Trey said that. I am disappointed in both sides of our coaches in this game because I thought that Dirk Koetter did not do a very good job of taking advantage of these opportunities, but he was not assisted by his star quarterback who had DeSean Jackson wide open, running to the post, and just threw a shitty underthrown ball.
That was the worst throw of the game.
Yeah, and that is, you talk about momentum changes, and people talk about the Dalvin Cook fumble that wasn't, right?
Yep.
Huge play. They happen. They happen in every game, right? Sometimes you get them and sometimes you don't.
Yep.
But a fumble is one of those sort of things that just sort of literally happens. This was well set up, well run route, tons of open space to throw it. Like, this was not a hard throw.
He had time, too. He had good protection, good pocket, was able to step up and just made a really bad throw. He had literally half the field open, and he threw it late behind into the wrong half. It should have been a touchdown that turned into an interception.
So as we were talking about, with Jameis, you can have 80% of a game that's pretty damn good and saving some pretty bad snaps, like you said, from Ali Marpet, but you put that interception in there, you throw in the interception with DeSean Jackson coming across on a drag route. Maybe DeSean should have gotten across the field. It doesn't matter. It was still a bad throw. It would have been a tough catch even if he got across the field. You got the force into essentially triple coverage, and you got the dumb play that Cameron Brate saved his ass and saved 3 points.
Yep.
Those plays take a statistically good game, a pretty accurate game actually, which is interestingly enough, and make it ugly, you know?
Yep. The other interception, the one to DeSean Jackson that the other Viking safety name picked it off. That I actually don't think was a very bad throw. DeSean Jackson was coming over the middle on a crossing pattern and just kind of got caught in some traffic. I believe Harrison Smith kind of cut him off, and then the other safety just picked the ball off. He was going to run into the safety, so he turned away a little bit. And then I guess a little bit of a miscommunication on either depth or, what Jameis was seeing on that route. But I don't think that was an egregious interception. But, yeah, the other two were definitely bad. And the Brate throw was, you know, something that they can't do because, you know, they were in field goal range at that time. So, you know, if Brate doesn't make that, you know, incredible play, that's, you know, probably going 6 the other way. So.
Right. Yeah, that guy's still running to wherever you run in Minnesota. Yeah. I would assume someplace warm.
Yep.
So Steven, let's talk a little bit about Case Keenum and then we've got one more question on the Vikings and we'll turn our guns on the New York Giants.
Yes.
I went on a bit of a tirade a couple of times because I got tired of hearing people saying, but it was Case Keenum, but it was Case Keenum.
Yep.
On a first read or first watch. And then I got a chance to go back and do about half of it on coach's film. I wasn't able to do the rest because I was in Miami this week. The kid was throwing a pretty accurate ball. It looked like to me, what did you see out of Case this week?
Yeah. I mean, he played great. You know, the first throw to Thielen, Hargraves was beat on that, but I don't think that, the image that sticks out is Hargraves kind of like ripping at Thielen's chest like a half a second or a quarter of a second before the ball lands there. I mean, there's no defense for a perfect throw. Case Keenum had a lot of those. They did engineer the game plan pretty well. They had a lot of like short drops and quick throws. I think the key really was they were able to survive on third down. The Bucs had really, outside of, you know, less than a handful of rushes from Gerald McCoy and Noah Spence before he got hurt, They really had no pass rush to speak of, so Keenum had time. He always had third and manageable, so they really were able to keep the drives going that way. And then obviously Stephon Diggs made that really big play on the offsides, where, you know, it was a free play and then took it to the house. So as long as they can keep the Giants from, you know, establishing the run and getting third and shorts, they'll be in a better spot. But that was a big problem against the Vikings. Keenum always had third and manageable, and you know, he converted a high percentage of those.
Yeah, they converted 54% of, I think, 12 or 13 yeah. opportunities on third down, and the Bucs were 1 of 6.
Yep.
Which that dog doesn't hunt, as they used to say in Polk County. They ran 70 total plays versus 51.
Yep.
Which, you know, you get more opportunities and good things happen on offense, and that's going to be the problem. The thing I thought schematically they did we did not seem to have any concept of, which, you know, maybe we weren't supposed to. Everyone knows that Gerald McCoy is going to be disruptive.
Yep.
They seem to do a very good job of subtly sliding Keenum left and right, letting Gerald get upfield, and just assuming the rest of the three left weren't going to get to him.
Yep.
And that doesn't seem like rocket surgery.
I mean, they definitely protected really well. There were a few times where Gerald sliced into the backfield, and like you said, the Vikings kind of took advantage of his over-aggressiveness, a la a backdoor cut in basketball.
Exactly. That's a great analogy. We're talking to Stephen Che at Che_say, that's C-H-E-A-H, on Twitter. I know a lot of you guys have followed him for a long time. I just saw Opie was talking about that. He's like, oh, it's Che Say. I love his All-22 stuff. Well, good. That's why we have him on the show. I'm glad that you guys like it, because we do too. Let's talk about the Giants a little bit.
Yep.
And let's talk about what was just brought up in the chat room by D's Bucks and Rick H as well. Coach Smith, like, I busted on Coach Cutter a little bit, but Coach Smith at the same time. Now, you lose Grimes, you lose a ton of pressure, you lose your linebacking core, essentially. But it sure as hell looked conservative what he was doing with his corners, and he didn't do a whole lot aggressive with his safeties. What do you expect to see against a Giants team that, either because they can't run very effectively, because they haven't shown they can this year, or because they really like to throw the ball, likes to sling the ball around the field?
Yep. So their offense definitely presents some concerns. I think the biggest Achilles heel of their offense is their offensive line, highlighted by Eric Flowers, who was picked, you know, 30 spots ahead of Donovan Smith, the same draft. They play the same position. But their receivers are definitely a problem. You know, you got to pray that Brent Grimes comes back healthy, because he's really the only one that can match up with OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr. on the outside. I think my biggest concern of their receiving core, honestly, is Brandon Marshall. not because he's the best one of the receivers, but because he is a bad matchup for us. The Bucs employ smaller corners. I think Ryan Smith is the largest one. He's 6 feet tall. So if he's on him, Ryan Smith also not the most seasoned cornerback. But if they have Hargraves on him, Vernon Hargraves has really struggled against size. I think that showed up mainly in week 17 last year against Carolina, but you really see it, you know, he's 5'10" at the height of 50-50 balls. It really poses a problem against like a Kelvin Benjamin or a Devin Funchess even, or a, you know, especially a Brandon Marshall, who might be the best in the league at that. So I think that's going to be a concern for me. I think Marshall had maybe 8 catches last week for, you know, a little bit under 80 yards. But, you know, I think he had 11 targets. So Eli is going to be looking his way. And my biggest concern is who's going to be guarding him on our side, and how are we going to game plan for him even more so than Odell Beckham?
Now, it's interesting. I agree with your assessment, by the way, on the size issue. But this is no mystery, right? We play Carolina twice a year. We play Julio Jones twice a year. This is something Mike Smith knows, and he has chosen these weapons to go to war with, and at times they seem to work out pretty well. There have to be schematic things we can do. Now, what I know that we've done in the past is we try and be cute, and I don't mean that as a pejorative, mind you. If you look at the Dalvin Cook throw to the flat that Chris Conte, everyone's favorite whipping boy, saves a touchdown on early in the game, Dalvin Cook goes out to the flat. Levante David decides he's going to blitz. He doesn't get home. Case makes a good throw. Buccaneers defense of the past, when they make that decision, would roll coverage to the hot read. The hot read is the back. The back is going to the flat. Case Keenum is staring at this action. If he sees the linebacker, that's his read. In the past, the Rondé Barbers, which in this case would be McClain, would roll underneath on a dared. That's chess, right? That's, here you go, Case. Look at this. You should do Y, and then we're going to go ahead and run and get cheese curds with Sid Davey in the front row.
Yep.
I don't see Mike Smith doing any of that, and I don't understand why that is.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Smith, with a zone-based scheme in the corners, he's really playing off and really hoping that the pass rush does get home first. You know, he does want to get pressure with four. Last week, we did see a lot more blitzing, especially out of the linebackers. He does like to blitz Levante David, but last week it was really evident with the four not getting home. He had to bring more pressure, and with more pressure, leaves less guys in coverage, so there's going to be more open receivers. And if the blitz doesn't get home, you know, you're going to leave yourself exposed. So we definitely saw a good amount of that last week. It really all starts up front with the Bucs. If they can get pressure, especially on, you know, third downs, which I think is going to be huge, that Jacquees Smith is back this week. So they can really have their full, you know, depending on Noah Spence's health, their full third down nickel rush with Ayers, McCoy, Jack Smith, and Noah Spence in the game to really put some heat on Eli Manning.
Now let's talk about that. We had a question earlier, and I promised I'd get back to it. What do you expect to see out of Jack Smith, a guy who's been injured, oft injured? He's a speed guy. We haven't seen him. What do you expect to see this week? How many plays do you think you might see him get in on? And given that Noah Spence had that shoulder issue last year, I thought he had surgery in the offseason to handle this, and now it's jacked up again. I'm now afraid of both of our speed ends from a health perspective.
Yep. Well, I would point to that Noah Spence, when he did get, you know, hurt that shoulder last year, he actually played better. He did wear like a restraining device that he couldn't lift his arm all the way over his head. But hopefully we can expect some results this year, although, you know, we'll see. Jack Smith, I expect him to be like purely a situational third down rusher. I would expect maybe, you know, 15, 20 snaps at most out of him. Could even be on the lower end of that. But yeah, he would be used like that ideally, because I don't think you can really start him full time and Noah.
No.
And, you know, obviously with the progress last year, Noah Spence made some really good progression in his career. And you want to keep, you know, the big uglies in there on the rushing downs with Will Golston, who's just such an underrated player.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad he's getting paid because he deserves every dollar he's making.
Were you
the one who called him Suplex King or something, or was that real Bucks talk?
Yeah. yeah, the human suplex machine,
there
Will Golston.
Yeah.
He was a monster on Sunday. The reason I know everyone's heated about the Conte fumble or not fumble. But the reason that down even happened was because Will Golston collapsed the line and tackled Dalvin Cook for no gain at the one. So, you know, while it sucks to debate that, you know, we wouldn't even be debating it had Will Golston not made a great play. And, you know, maybe if he gets a little bit more, the ball's going the other way. But we'll see.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's good to have Will in there, but right now the line is not getting it done. They're making a bunch of noise, but they're not getting a lot of action. It doesn't help that the guys behind them that are normally rock stars are all busted up between Levante David and Quan Alexander. That's not any slight to Beckwith and Darius Glanton, with Devontae Baum when he gets. We have depth there, but one of the things we talked about last year even was the thing that changed for Levante was he started to really understand depth in coverage and drops, and because he always could run downhill and get the ball. That was never a question. None of these guys have a problem with that, right?
Yep.
They've got to understand that they cover more than just that, and that becomes a challenge when you go against a quarterback like Eli Manning, who can lead you one direction and drop the ball over your head and make you look really, really stupid really quickly. So put on your prognosticator hat. Tell the fans listening to this podcast live in the chat room what you think we're going to see this week out of the Bucs, and go ahead and make a prediction if you want to.
Okay. So I think this is a good matchup for the Bucs at this time, because I think Minnesota on defense has a lot of similar playmakers at the levels that the Giants would. They got Everson Griffen, Brian Robinson on the edge. The Giants have JPP and what's the right end's name that got paid? Olivier Vernon. They have, you know, Landon Collins at safety. The Vikings had Harrison Smith. They have, you know, the Jackrabbit, Janoris Jenkins at corner. You know, the Vikings had Xavier Rhodes. So I think as far as, like, moving the ball, which the Bucs did move the ball, you know, I think Jameis had over 300 yards.
He did.
That is promising for, you know, the Bucs. I would expect a similar scheme employed in the hurry-up when needed, but I do expect a more slow-it-down, run-the-ball game. As far as the defense, it definitely will be interesting how they match up with the Giants, just because the Giants are, you know, so talented at the receiver position, especially. I think if they can really shut down the run and Paul Perkins, who hasn't really done too much early in the season, and keep the Giants in third and long, we could see a home win from the Pewter Pirates. So for a prediction, I'm going to say 23-13 Bucks. But it'll definitely be interesting as far as health-wise, if Grimes is back. And that could really change a lot. I think he is he's really the key to this game, Brent Grimes getting back healthy.
He definitely changes the game a bit. Now, Cash in the chat room just said he heard Vernon may not play. I don't know if you mean Vernon Hargraves or not, Cash. If you got a link for that, that'd be good. I have not heard that thus far.
You might mean Olivier Vernon, the Giants.
Oh, Olivier Vernon. Okay, gotcha. Thank you very much to both of you. Thank you to Cash and to you. You know, that helps out with Donovan Smith, obviously. But
yes.
One of the things, and I'll ask you one more question. I've held you on too long. I apologize. I really appreciate you joining. The thing that we did well week one, or our week one, that we seem to regress out of, though I didn't get enough content because we didn't try it enough times. We only tried 9 times. It seemed like we insisted on running out of tight formations again, which for this offensive line, in my opinion, is a recipe for disaster, because you take all of the risk of those weapons we brought in and you nullify them by running them through traffic and bullshit. Right. It is so counterintuitive to me that it causes me what I think is an aneurysm, but I don't want to ask the doctor, and that's why guys die younger. So I would like to see what we showed against the Bears, which is, shit, show them 4 wides out there, and I don't mean literally, show doubles, right? You can have the tight end split out into the slots. I don't care. But create space for that line to move around and let Jameis check. If they're going to do something stupid like try and stack the box with that, they're going to creep someone in and leave someone uncovered, just sling the ball out there. This goes back to the weapons question. If you went and got all these fucking weapons, let's try and use them. Don't go run a wing T offense.
So I actually have some encouraging news based on that. Looking at the all 22, there were a few times where, you know, really with the Bucs offense in the ideal world, it's really pick your poison, right? You know, especially when Doug Martin comes back. But when you split DeSean Jackson out wide, as well as, you know, Mike Evans, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, Adam Humphries, when you split those guys out wide, you know, especially DeSean Jackson, if you see a single high safety, you really want to attack that and give DeSean Jackson a chance to make a play, and that's really what happened on the touchdown. There was another play earlier in the game, same situation, where, you know, there's a single high safety, Jameis checked to something else and gave DeSean Jackson a really nice ball that he caught for a big gain. But, you know, that's the ideal. You know, you can split DeSean out wide, and if they go 2 safeties, then you can, you know, run the ball out of the shotgun, you know, on those draws. But if not, and they go single high, you know, that's the time to attack. And what's really great about, we didn't see it too much last week again because we ran the ball 9 times, but O.J. Howard is actually from the film, you know, week 2, the first game against the Bears.
Right.
He is a terrific blocker.
Yes.
He is like a really, really superior blocker. And they were using him a lot last week on to chip Everson Griffin. Donovan Smith, I actually thought, had a pretty decent game despite giving up, you know, a handful of hurries last week. I'm interested to see, like you, you know, the Bucs skill position players used more as chess pieces to kind of dictate or basically take what the defense gives them, whether it be, you know, a single high safety and throw the ball, or, you know, a not loaded box and to run the ball.
It seemed to me like the Bucs were afraid of the pass rush, and so they insisted on almost being in a derivative of max protect by having guys around, rather than giving their offense a chance to do that, and what you just articulated, and for you fans out there listening to this either in the chat room now live or afterwards on the podcast, Steven's probably got video clips out there. Go look up two high safety or cover two base versus single high. It's really easy to identify if you're looking at the defense. If they come out, they typically have the two safeties back there. You'll see them near each hash. What'll happen quite often against the Bucks because of what they're trying to do, which is stop the run, they'll rotate one of the safeties down into the box, and the other safety is going to declare, usually going to the strong side. Whatever receiver does not have safety help is now your read. That's it. That's as easy as football gets right there.
Yep.
Right? And if you can't see that on the film yet, I'm going to tell you, go get Game Pass, watch the replays, go watch Baldinger break it down, go watch Steven break it down. That is where it starts to become fun, right? Then they do yep. this thing that I raved about last podcast, Steven. I don't know if you heard it or not, but they'll split Charles Sims out to yep. the X. When you split Charles Sims out to the X, the cornerback shifts out to cover the X. They are going to leave the slot uncovered, which is usually going to be Mike Evans, and that is a goddamn pitch and catch every time. You don't call another play. You never huddle.
Yep. And so, you know, he did have a really weak a very poor week two first game, Charles Sims. But I was actually really encouraged by his progress against the Vikings. I mean, this guy can really pass block from the running back position. And, you know, when they do motion him out, you know, like you said, if they bring a corner to follow him, then that frees up one of our receivers. But if they bring a linebacker, I want to throw out to Chuck Sims every play because he toasted, I don't know if it was Danny Trevathan or whatever linebacker was on him for that.
I think,
you know,
it was Trevathan against Chicago. Yeah, I think it was Trevathan.
Yeah, but Jameis just overthrew him.
Right.
But yeah, anytime we can get Chuck Sims out in motion, something's going to happen, and it's usually going to be pretty good.
Well, listen, Steven, this is football porn for me. I enjoy talking to you about it. I love seeing your videos. For those of you who are not following Steven on Twitter, it's at @CHEAH_say, at Chase Say.
Yep.
Make sure you're following him out there. He does this stuff all the time. We love having him on as often as possible. We're very fortunate. We got him. We got Real Bucks Fan Talker. I screwed up their Twitter again. I'll get it right. We got some guys doing some really good video capture. And then you got Tampa Bay Trey from Pewter Report on his cover three, usually taking these things and breaking them down. If
yep.
you don't understand what those guys are saying or what we say on this podcast, ask. If you ask the questions, I guarantee every one of them is going to try and answer in a way that'll help you learn more about the game, and it will make it more fun while you watch it. I promise you. Steven, thanks for joining us. Where else can they get you other than on Twitter, man?
Just on Twitter for right now. But, you know, open for things in the future. But, yeah, just on Twitter for the moment. Doing this for myself, doing it for the love of the game. And, you know, just like, you know, you encourage fans to. The reason I did this was to understand football a lot better. There's a lot of these angles you don't get on TV and that you can really see the plays breaking down and kind of where the advantages and disadvantages are. So if anybody's out there that is curious, you know, feel free to, you know, obviously look at my breakdowns, look at other guys' breakdowns and watch it yourself. It is really definitely very informative.
Well, I'll tell you what, we love having you on, man. Anytime you want to do more, let me know. I've got a spare room too, so you're welcome to stay over. I've got extra computers, whatever the hell you need, let me know.
Are you by any chance going to the Packers game this year?
I am going to the Packers game this year.
All right, let's link up because I'm actually going to be there too.
That sounds great, man. I'm looking forward to it. We'll go to Lambeau and have a good time.
All right, sounds good.
All right,
thanks
care,
for having
Steven.
Me on, Derek.
All right, brother, take care.
All right.
All right, Steven Che, at Che Say on Twitter. Always a good guest, always good times to have him on. I really do enjoy what he does and how he does it. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that as well. Jack Smith playing for a contract. I actually think he is. If I'm Jack Smith, I'm playing just to prove that I'm not broken. And that's not a slight to Jack as a human being. But when you're a speed guy and your knee keeps getting jacked up, that's a problem. I said that in the offseason, and I'm still concerned about that. Now, Skulls and Swords, go ahead and drop your Skulls and Swords in here. From last game, we'll wrap that up. We'll talk a little bit about the Giants game looking forward. My Skull and my Sword. Sword was tough for me this week. I don't know if you guys had an easier time than I did. I struggled to find someone who I thought really played well consistently. There were bright spots here and there, and I certainly thought that there were more bright spots maybe than I anticipated in some ways. Looking at the tape initially, but I'm going to atypically when I normally would blame the coaching staff on both of these, I'd give the skull to probably to Cutter this week. I'm actually going to give it to Jameis, and it's not because he didn't throw the ball well at times. It's not because he wasn't. You know what? That's a really good call, Opie. Dotson with the sword. That's a really solid call. And normally, as a fat guy, I watch the line closely. I should have noticed Dotson's been playing better football. That is a very, very good call. These Bucks has a skull for Hargraves. Opie, it's one person, brother. We can't do the secondary. Come on. One guy. Come on, Chris. You guys are regulars. You know the rules. Damn it. Thank you, Brent Allen. Skull, Hargraves, sword, Brait. Probably not bad. Not bad on the break call. I actually had a sword for McCoy. I thought McCoy was disruptive when he was in there. I thought he played injured, which is great. But I like the break call. I really like the Dotson call. Skull for Ryan Smith, probably a very good call. Ryan Smith got his ass handed to him a number of times in that game. Thrust into the starting position. He's not a starting cornerback yet. I think he's got some good Play-Doh there, but I don't think he's ready. But Vernon sure as hell had a rough game as well. Opie fixes his call. Skull's going to go to Ryan Smith. And he's going to give me some more information here while we train the guns over to the Giants. One of the things we did was we started watching some trends, almost like a little report card, a sword to the team doctor. How are you going to give him a sword? That's the good one. They didn't keep everyone healthy. Shit. It's like they had a sword. They were killing all the players. No, I'm just kidding. They didn't kill anybody. There were no players injured. Well, there were. But there are none killed in the recording of this podcast. A sword for Humphreys from Spent. Beckwith getting some love as well. I think Beckwith is playing great football. We've talked about that as well. For the Giants, one of the things we want to see is the Jameis report card. Better reads, improved accuracy, deep ball accuracy, and reduced turnovers. I actually think he did poorly in every one of those except for improved accuracy. I thought his accuracy was very good. There were a number of times when he had something bad happen, but it wasn't because of a bad throw. I want to scroll back up. The Bucks realist asked a question. Can you confirm the story about D-Jax and Mike Evans having a huge tirade on the plane up to Minnesota, and the team had meetings on the issues that were late into the night on the hotel? I cannot confirm that, Bucks realist. I'm sorry. I don't have any source that has told me that. I'm unaware of any shenanigans and or hijinks between those gentlemen. So I apologize. Sword for O.J. Howard from Chris. Beckwith is surprising Opie. He's not surprising me. I saw it in training camp. I said it in every damn training camp video, guys. Beckwith shouldn't surprise you. Devontae Bond shouldn't surprise you when he gets some stuff in there, too. Donovan Smith getting some love from Cash, which is nice. Rick H. brings up a good point. Jameis is due for a big game. The NFL guys made some comment about Jameis coming off of a multi-interception game. It has got some sort of ridiculous record. I didn't hear the last little tidbit because I was leaving the room at the time. But you certainly hope that that's true. On the running back side, I'm not blaming the running backs for shit this week because they didn't get a chance to run. Yeah, Bucks realist. If you've got a link or a source on that, that would be great because none of us have heard it in the chat room. And we all pay pretty close attention to what's going on with the Bucks. So on the wide receiver side, it was good to see DeSean Jackson get into the game, literally. That's good to see him being productive. We need he and Mike Evans both to be productive. We need them all to work collaboratively with the Adam Humphreys, Cam Brates, O.J. Howards of the world, Chris Godwin as well. The tight end flexibility that we have with O.J. Howard and Cam Brate doesn't mean shit if you can't use it. That's the difference. We've got to be able to use those guys, not just to block, which is great, but to get out there into pass routes as well and become a weapon. It's interesting. I think Jameis is still feeling a little bit of that concern he had from the Bears game when the ball got tipped and he tried to do his favorite skinny post to Cam Brate. He had Mike Evans on a slant early in the game that he overthrew. Mike still got his hands on it, and I'd say 8 times out of 10, Mike makes that catch. But he wasn't able to grab it. That was a conversion that failed early in the game. On the defensive side of the ball, they've got to get some pressure going. The linebackers are going to have to limp through this, literally, with Levante and Quan out. These guys have been really jumped into the firing squad to help what's going on. And in the secondary, they have got to figure out what the fuck to do from a scheme perspective. They can't play 10 to 12 yards off the ball and let people catch the ball in front of them. Shit, it was 3rd and 12 at one point after a holding penalty on a conversion for Minnesota in the third quarter. And I think it was Vernon Hargraves played 12 yards off the ball. It's like sticks coverage, and the guy just breaks the slant off in front of him. As Cheryl could have completed the pass. And that's not because Cheryl's not an athlete, because she was a softball player in high school, I believe. But you cannot do that. You simply can't. I have not heard confirmation on Kwan yet, Brent, either, but being soft tissue, my guess is he will be out. If I'm them, I'm not risking soft tissue. I've got him on game-ready devices, in cryo, everything. I'm deathly afraid of hamstrings. So we'll see. My guess is he'll go out and he'll do dynamic stretch and let them know whether or not he can go. They may tape him and see if he can run. But there's no reason to go out there and re-injure him. It's not like they don't have talent there. That's why you have backup players. Are we better with him? Yes, without a doubt. But you don't want to do something that's irreparable. And without knowing, they call it a hamstring strain, I think is what it's officially called. I have no idea what came across on their scans. So, and I'm not a doctor. Shucker might know more than me. He's not a doctor, but I think he's an EMT. Let's do some keys to the game this week. I can tell I was in a bad mood when I wrote this. My keys to the game this week, key number one, I don't think we need Bulla to call him up. I don't think he does anything for us. I like Bulla, but he's no better. He's certainly not better than the guys we have on this team. We've got Lynch still and Glanton that are playing good football. I don't think there's any need for it. Paramedic, I apologize, Shuck. Score some fucking points. Point one. The defense did not play very well this week, but the defense played well enough that if the offense had done their job, this game would have been a game and we might have won it. This offense is what we have been hammering about. This offense is supposed to be spectacular. This offense has all of the weapons in the world. This offense has a franchise quarterback. This offense has sterling receivers. This offense has an offensive line that has been together and should be getting better. Ali Marpet having shit, he could have gotten the skull this week for the bad snaps, and I love Ali Marpet. Hell, I would adopt Ali Marpet. This offense has to become the offense it's supposed to be. That is on the coach, that's on Todd Monken, that's on Jameis Winston, that's on every player that straps on a fucking helmet for this team. When they step on the field, they are supposed to score touchdowns. Yes, I know the defense across from them are professionals, but right now, we outmatch the teams we face by and large. Go execute and score points. Don't make the defense save your ass with three turnovers every fucking game. That's not the way this is supposed to work. Point number two. Get to the goddamn QB. The defense has got to get some pressure on Eli Manning against a bad line, right? They got to do it. They got to figure out how to do it. Take risks if you got to. They got to get to the QB. And then the last point, this is a nut check time. It's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine from Atlanta, Harold, on the way to the watch party this week, and he called last game a must-win game, and I was like, God damn it, math tells me that's not true, and it still tells me it's not true with our third game of the year not being a must-win game. It's not, mathematically. You're coming home. You've had an emotional roller coaster. Your fans are like a bunch of bipolar ex-girlfriends from high school. You destroyed Chicago. You were emotionally crushed by Minnesota. You've played pretty well at home. You're playing a Giants team that I think is more mystique than power right now. And you're setting up for a Thursday night matchup with the Patriots. You had an opportunity to do some really cool shit coming into this. You really did. You've got to right the ship. I'm never going to call Game 3 a must-win game, but right now, it's already ugly in Tampa Bay, folks. You guys see it. You see it on Twitter. You see it on Facebook. You see all the bullshit. It's time to become the team you're supposed to be. Cash, I hear you. That's exactly why I'm even having that conversation. You know I never have these conversations in the first quarter of the season. Never. That Patriots game is going to be a challenge, man. The Patriots are still the class of the league. I don't care how sometimes they look human. They're the fucking Patriots. On a Thursday night. Short week. It's not like we're going to get magically super healthy on that week. We have a game Sunday. So, with all of the hoopla, with all of the expectations, with all the red carpet, with all of the cameras, with all the smiling, and with all the high-fiving, and the celebrating, and the going and collecting weapons, and all this shit, now you got to get the job done. Predictive MVPs on offense. There is no question who this will be in my mind. It is going to be Jameis Winston. I saw on the PewterCast thing, there was some discussion where we've already heard the rumbles of, is Jameis Winston a franchise quarterback? I told you guys about the jackass sitting in front of me in a preseason game when Jameis threw a pick early, popping off about this. Everyone's on the edge of their seat to throw someone under the bus. I think Jameis bounces back. I think he has a great game. I think he leverages all of his weapons, and that's what will make it special. Right? You don't have to just go to one. Spread the ball around. He's got all the weapons to use. On defense, we're going to have to figure out who the hell the predictive MVP is. I'd love to go with the basic, but I can't because I think Gerald McCoy's hurt. I'd love to see him have a great game. I'd like to see Noah Spence bounce back. I am going to go with my darling of training camp, and it's going to be Beckwith on defense. Brent Allen says it's way, 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 way too early to be talking about that, but I don't know what that is. He may be talking about must-win games. That's why I prefaced it. Brent Allen says his predictive MVP on defense is Vernon. He's going to have a big game, a good bounce-back game, which would be nice to see. Brandon thinks the run game is going to show up this week. I hope so, and I hope they do run it out of spread. I have no issue. Oh, the Jameis thing, I agree. I think it's horseshit. You got to let running backs run. I don't think you need to run them into crowds, though. I just don't think it's necessary. I think it's foolish what we did. So those are my predictive MVPs on the score. And I've always warned you guys never to bet on me because I'm never picking against the Bucks. I'm gonna go with my heart like I always do, and I'm gonna say the Bucks offense does what whoever said in the chat room they're supposed to put up 24 points a game this year. They're gonna cross over 24, get to 27. It's going to be a 27-21 win for the Buccaneers. Rick reminds us this is the final game without Doug Martin, which is nice. Jonathan D's Bucks Hinkle says offensive predictive MVP is Jameis, defensive McCoy with two sacks. Two sacks, he says. Take that. He put his thing down, he flipped it, he also reversed it. So that's the scoop. That's the scoop this week, guys. Now, it's going to be a long tailgate. I'm going to tell you that. If you're coming out to the game, 11 o'clock it starts. Brent Allen has a 23-17 win for the Bucks. D's Bucks has a 27-17 win for the Bucks. Everyone's picking some good points. The offense has to get their damn job done. That's what it comes down to. We'd love to see you out there. We're doing the pies for pediatric cancer, so if you want to put a pie in our faces, you can buy a pie and do that. We'll have a great time out there. Music, food, our sponsors, Steps Towing, Steakhouse Elite, Don Q, Tito's Rum, Pepin Distributing. We'll have all of our friends out there, our Buckaholic friends, our Stick Carrier friends, our random friends from Canada who talk to us all the time. I think we probably have another 15 countries represented this week. We got a 20-17 prediction from Cash. Bucks winning a defensive struggle. Chris Oxentine, Bucks 21, Giants 16. A parting note, and I'm looking forward to seeing all you guys who are coming out Sunday for sure. I'm looking forward to talking to you during the week at some point, probably Wednesday night. We'll do a podcast before the Thursday night game. I'm looking forward to seeing everyone just step back from the ledge. If you've got a Bucks fan friend who's gone off the deep end, have an intervention, will you? Give him a hug. The Brew Crew, that's right, Brew Crew will be in the house. Spent, thank you for reminding me. Tampa Bay Brew Crew, legends in the area, which is phenomenal. D's Bucks has a rallying cry for Buck Nation's latest article, which I will get edited and published tonight. I apologize for my latency, sir. The picture I posted earlier talked about 10 years of misery. Misery. We have weapons, guys. We have good human beings. By the way, I did like that people talking shit about the Bucks during a different conversation we're not going to have on this podcast. Millionaire crybabies, blah, blah, blah. They're just doing because the team required it. Saying, because I think it was Roy Cummings and a couple of other local guys said, well, these guys do a lot of work in the community. I was able to point out that, no, the ones we work with are not mandated to do this. They do this because they want to. They have their own foundations. They follow their heart. They do the things in the community. We have a good group of guys to support, folks. We have a good team to support. Jonathan's right. Ray J needs to be loud. Let's get the fuck out there. Do our job as fans. Have a great time. Get food. Get drinks. Throw some pies in people's faces to raise money and awareness. for pediatric cancer support, advocacy, research, etc. And Chris, I know they weren't the worst 10 years in Buccaneers history, but it was a pretty shitty 10 years. Rick says it well. The win was good. It wasn't world-changing. The loss was bad, but not a season ender. Need to get healthy and we'll be fine. So I'm looking forward to having some fun with some of the best people I know on the planet on Sunday at 3316 West Ohio Avenue. Get there early. Get parked. Get your wristband on. Donate till it hurts to pediatric cancer. If you'd like to bring some supplies home, our boy Crazy. You guys know Crazy. He's got family. He's got a house in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is suffering right now. We didn't do an official drive because, to be honest, I think everyone is so fatigued with drives. We've had so much trouble going on with hurricanes and stuff that doesn't make it any more or less important who's hurting. The people in Puerto Rico are in dire straits. Crazy's done a great job of working with Kurt Schilling. If you can help him, help him. We'd love to see you help him. We're trying to help him as best we can. We thank him for doing what he's doing. I thank every one of you who've done what you could do for Harvey, for Irma, for all of the things that are going on. Because when you look at it, this is our escape, right? We're going to go bring some stuff, help Crazy do what he does, have some drinks, and go cheer the team. It is a sellout. I hope it'll be full. I don't really care, though. I only care about the people who are there. I know I'm going to be loud. I don't give a shit what the people in the club think. I'm going to have a great time, and I'll see all you guys there. Go Bucks.
Yeah. Yeah, school, yeah, 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 yeah. We're like bugs running, man. I think that's all, folks. My man O's just shut down another show. Same name, same time for the past 11 years. Guess what? Next week we gon' be right here talking about the Bucks and having a good time. We give it to you straight, don't need to be between the lines. The beat drop hard every time I hit the nine. And if you didn't know it, this is Franco on the rhymes. Yeah. 11 years strong, y'all. It's the What the Buck podcast. My man Derek, they call him old school. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck.